Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to another edition of Inside the Football Business with Neil Stratton and Justin Van Fulpen, where we talk about what's going on outside the lines in regards to the business of football. Today we wanted to talk about the trap draft picks in regards to, when we talk about trap draft picks, we talk about guys that got overdrafted, especially when we're talking about the number one overall pick. Guys who maybe they got pushed up because of a, you know, performance there in college or a lack of star potential, all-star game, you know, performance, you know, et cetera. So how's it going, Neil?
It's going well. It's going well. It's an interesting topic, and I think it's one that's that kind of breeds plenty of opinion and a lot of thought, and not something maybe you hear as much about in your regular garden variety discussion of the draft. But I think it bears a little bit of thought and a little bit of discussion. Some interesting points to make, I think.
Yeah, definitely, and we'll kind of dive right in that. You know, and I think a lot of people, when we talk about, you know, number one overall picks, and just kind of in the recent, in the last, let's just kind of go back, maybe not 10 years, but back to 2007 with Jamarcus Russell. You know, definitely a guy who had all the physical tools. I mean, you could see this guy had, you know, the arm strength, could make all the throws, you know, kind of LSU. You know, this was kind of the one time LSU had a quarterback who could really, you know, sling the ball, you know, around, and some, you know, talented receivers, you know, that was able to help them, you know, to the bowl game there against Brady Quinn and Notre Dame.
Right.
We kind of saw two guys that we thought were, hey, you know, NFL superstars there, and
mm-hmm.
Jamarcus obviously, you know, outdueled, you know, Brady in that game, and was able to then, you know, push himself up to the number one overall pick ahead of potential, you know, Hall of Famer, you know, Calvin Johnson, who went number two, you know, to the Detroit Lions.
Yeah.
And if we look
yeah.
at him, you know, kind of, you know, let's talk about Jamarcus Russell and what happened to him and why he kind of got pushed to that number one overall pick there.
Well, to me, I think there are kind of two schools of thought. One is he had a remarkable pro day, you know, made the famous butt throw where he was seated on the 50 and threw it through the uprights, and that's impressive. But I think it also had a lot to do with the Peach Bowl, as you alluded to. I mean, he put on a show, and everyone was really impressed, and it seemed like a lot of scouts kind of threw out everything that he had done prior to that Peach Bowl, and I think the teams were excited about his potential, and they saw him with his needle pointing up, and they saw this huge guy with a big arm who might be able to do some exciting things. And I think that in this case, a lot of teams kind of, well, at least the Raiders to some degree, really threw away all sense of reality. But then again, I think as we got closer to the draft, there were those detractors who came out of the woodwork a bit more and said, hey, look, this is a guy that maybe, you know, has tools, but is he the guy off the field that he needs to be? Did he have the success on a consistent basis at LSU that you want out of a number one overall? And I think that we've seen subsequently that he wasn't that guy. And it seems like, you know, obviously, I think the tools were there. He's as big as a mountain, and he could throw it through a brick wall. It seems like, you know, perhaps he made some choices off the field that were questionable. I've seen a lot written, that he wasn't the kind of guy that was, you know, a film junkie who really studied and prepared himself the way he needed to. And those things came back to haunt him in his NFL career. And so his time in the league was really pretty short. And once the Raiders were done with him, he didn't hang around much longer after that.
Yeah, and definitely. I think, you know, also, if we look back and, you know, revisit history, this was before the new CBA. So he was, you know, they were dealing with
True.
The kind of the contract stuff. He held out, wasn't in camp on, you know, on time. And I think that, you know, that is a big thing. And that's a big advantage that, you know, people don't look at, you know, nowadays. And, you know, as far as, you know, no holdouts, we haven't seen a holdout in a number of years with the new CBA, you know, there. He held out, got into camp late, and was ever, you know, was kind of always behind, you know, the eight ball there. And like you mentioned, hey, and it's well documented, you know, with the syrup incident, you know, and the
right.
different things that were going on there. And, you know, and then he tried to kind of make a comeback He worked out with a friend of ours, Bryant Martin, there, mm-hmm. and trying to get him, you know, back into shape. Did have a workout for the Bears, you know, but was never, you know, signed there. And really, you know, kind of, you know, took a lot of his tools that he had there and didn't, you know, take advantage of those situations. And I think that's where guys need to understand is that, you know, there's always the next crop of, you know, players coming in, and just because you were drafted high, you're going to get a lot. You're going to get a lot of shots, but it's not going to be ever ending. You know, and mm-hmm. you got to be able to perform on the field, you know, and show, you know, leadership, especially at that position, you know, the quarterback position,
sure.
you know, being
sure.
you know a leader and being, you know, being able to lead that organization and be the face of the franchise.
I agree. I think that's one thing I think a lot of fans don't understand, and I didn't understand until I kind of started talking to scouts, but the value in these All-Star games is really kind of almost nil for scouts as they watch them, except at one position, and that's quarterback. And I've been told that scouts want to watch what the quarterback does between plays. Does he go and sit with his teammates? Does he kind of try to rally his offensive line, try to talk to his receivers about what he's seeing? Does he try to get them up if they're behind? Does he try to kind of keep them on the beam if they're way ahead? There's so many things that a quarterback can do or maybe doesn't do, and it shows up on the sideline. It shows up in their leadership. And one example, I think, of a player who's not that guy is Zach Mettenberger, a guy that he drew Joe Flacco comparisons when he was going into the draft a couple years ago. But if you watch him on the sideline at LSU, he really was most important with how his hair looked more than anything else consistently. And he was never a guy that would get up and talk to his teammates and get them fired up. He just wasn't that guy. And I guess we're getting a little bit off topic here, but you can find that if you see that on the sidelines, if you see that as a guy that you want to be the leader of your team, that's something you really have to take into consideration. I think perhaps the Raiders got a little too fixated on Russell's pure tools and made a mistake. And the irony is that the Raiders have been one of the teams that have been, through the years, most excited about pure toolsy kind of receivers. And in this instance, they passed up, you know, the kind of one in a million type receiver in Calvin Johnson and took Jamarcus Russell, and it came back to haunt him a bit.
Yeah, definitely. And staying on, you know, those quarterbacks there, let's drive, you know, 3 years down the road and look at Sam Bradford out of Oklahoma. Obviously, you know, won the Heisman Trophy, you know, as a redshirt sophomore, you know, came back, you know, and was injured, you know, but still was able to kind of push himself into the first overall, you know, pick there by the Rams. And then he was kind of the last guy of the mega contracts for the first overall pick. He was
right.
guaranteed $50 million by the Rams. You know, this was before the new CBA, you know, kind of kicked in there. And, you know, that was kind of one thing that the NFL was trying to do, was trying to regulate these enormous, you know, guaranteed contracts for unproven guys coming out, you know, out of college.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were able to do that. And Bradford was the beneficiary of the last really true big deal for, you know, rookies. And then, you know, he's been injured. You know, he was injured in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
He was injured in, you know, St. Louis there. And then obviously this week, you know, got injured again with the shoulder injury. And Sanchez, you know, came in and performed. It looks like, you know, Mark Sanchez will start this week for the Eagles. So, I mean, you know,
mm-hmm.
Sam Bradford, when we look at that, we look at, hey, he didn't even hardly play his last year there at Oklahoma, but still
right.
was the number one overall pick. Why did scouts, you know, really think that, hey, this was the guy that they could, you know, build a franchise there in St. Louis?
I think my theory there is that teams always reach for a quarterback. I mean, we saw that with Russell in 07. And I think that it was pretty widely agreed that Ndamukong Suh was the best player in the 2010 draft. But perhaps, you know, again, because Bradford had put up pinball numbers at Oklahoma, and perhaps because he was a junior, I think I've always felt that juniors and underclassmen are just sexier than fourth-year seniors are to NFL scouts. And I know that sounds crazy, but at times they forego their judgment and their gut, and they go with a guy that they see as still developmental. And I think maybe Bradford benefited from that to some degree. I think that there, but again, kind of going with the trap, you know, what we're talking about here. I think ultimately, perhaps the Rams had to live and die with Bradford because there weren't enough teams that wanted to step up and give him a king's ransom for Ndamukong Suh. As crazy as that sounds, and once again, the Lions were the benefactors of a team that felt like they had to take the safe guy, perhaps, rather than the best guy. And they took Bradford and passed on Sue, and the rest is history. One other note, and I think this may come across as odd to a lot of the fans and maybe less known people out there. I think a lot of scouts and a lot of evaluators don't see injuries as a purely bad luck thing. I think that they, many times, scouts, and maybe they're wrong to do this, but they see injuries as a byproduct of an inferior player. Maybe that player is inferior in strength, and maybe his basic skill set doesn't work and he's unable to defend himself or get out of the way or whatever. But I think that injuries are more than just a bad luck kind of capricious thing. I think a lot of teams really see that as a negative marker on your ability. And, I can scarcely think of a quarterback who's been injured more often than Bradford has in the last, 5 to 10 years. And we're seeing that manifest itself in his NFL playing career. I don't know going forward if he'll have a starting job after this year, and especially if Sanchez performs as he could perform in the Eagles' offense.
Yeah, and I think that's where you're at there with the injuries. That hurts his development. And I think when you look at him, you just look at a small-framed guy, was never able to kind of build his body up, and I don't know if that's because of the injuries there or just, his biomechanics there of his body structure. But he was always, kind of that thin-framed guy, even now, as you would think a guy would mature and get older and just kind of fill out naturally there, and he's never been able to, kind of do that there. So yeah, we'll see what Bradford's able to do. Hopefully he can get back to 100% and resurrect somewhat of his NFL career and see what's going to go on there. I mean, he took a big risk of the Eagles wanted to do a long-term deal this offseason when they had traded mm-hmm. for him. He decided not to do that, kind of bet on himself, and maybe that wasn't the best thing for his pocketbook there. So hopefully he can kind of get back healthy and rock and roll there for him.
Yeah, you have to admire someone who goes after it like that, but it doesn't always pay off.
Yeah, that's for sure. So we wish Sam Bradford the best there for him. So if we kind of move forward kind of in the years there, another kind of 3-year jump there, and that's in 2013 with Eric Fisher from Central Michigan. I mean, when he was kind of his preseason grades, I mean, everybody had a third round grade, on him during the spring there. Was able to kind of move up during his senior season there at Central Michigan to probably a early second, late first. He goes to the Senior Bowl, just has a great Senior Bowl there. I think a lot of people were, hey, where's the Chiefs going to be able to go there with that number one overall pick? There just wasn't that dominant, kind of look and see, hey, this is the greatest player, this is the number one, obvious number one overall pick, like some years there are and some years they're not. And a guy who's from the MAC, rises up and, takes the number one overall pick, which I think was a shocker for a lot of fans, a lot of, insiders, when it was all said and done, that Eric Fisher was the first overall pick for the Chiefs in 2013.
Mm-hmm. I think Fisher is the all-time trap number one, because there wasn't, as you mentioned, there wasn't a clear guy that everyone could point to and say, this is a guy that's going to be dominant for 10 years. And the funny thing is, I think the scouts are right. If you look at that draft, I was looking at who's the guy that should have gone number one. Boy, you talk about a first round that's littered with misses. Eric Fisher, number one. Luke Jokel, number two. Hasn't really panned out. Deion Jordan has been a colossal waste for the Dolphins. Essentially got Jeff Ireland fired from the GM spot there. Lane Johnson, solid, but not a dominant guy for the Eagles at four. Zeke Ansah, a guy who almost had had barely even played football, and goes, five overall to the Lions. I think the jury's still out. Barkevious Mingo has been a big disappointment for the Browns. Jonathan Cooper has been inconsistent starter, another bust. Kayvon Austin at the Rams at 8, and then Dee Milliner with the Jets. I mean, at 9. You have to go to 10 to see Chance Warmack with the Titans, who's, again, a solid, serviceable player. But you probably have to go to 13 with Sheldon Richardson to see a guy who's really been a standout performer, someone that the teams, I think everyone can point to as a young and rising star. If you go all across the first round, again, Eric Reed with the Niners is probably a guy that you would identify. Tyler Eifert has really stepped forward this year after a disappointing first year. But again, it's just not a draft where you can see a number of players that are, headed to the Hall of Fame.
Right, and probably the best player was, 48th overall to Le'Veon Bell, and obviously he got hurt this year, but he was probably the best, player, and people were questioning his kind of long speed and his athleticism,
sure.
Why he slipped to the second round there, and, being a big kind of bruising back there at Michigan State, but was able to kind of get in some great shape, and he's even in better shape now than he was coming out of Michigan State there with the Steelers, and, a guy who was dominant as a rookie and had a great start to this this season, despite missing the first two games, but definitely a guy who that, like I said, that the talent level hasn't shaken out. Now again, we're very early into these guys' careers and they could turn things around, but you kind of see what you have, with the first couple of years,
sure.
guys and what they're going to be. And, again, you hope, hey, those guys can, people can flip it around and here in kind of the light turns on for a lot of these guys and they become stars in the NFL.
But again, here is a guy that I think the Chiefs almost reluctantly took number one. Again, they didn't have to pay the King's ransom kind of signing bonus that they would have pre-2011, but at the same time, when you've got the number one pick, you really would like to get a guy that is going to be a dominant factor for you, who'll step right in and start, who'll be a consistent player for you, and maybe even a leader in the locker room. And I think it's fair to say the Chiefs haven't gotten that with Fisher so far.
No, and he's had some injury issues, and constant
sure.
inconsistencies because of the injuries there. And I think that's a kind of a big jump going from the MAC to the National Football League, and he just
sure
hasn't been
is.
Able to do that as well as expected. So,
right.
definitely another guy who, hey, probably got overdrafted there, and then we popped that next year, last year's draft in 2014, with the Houston Texans taking Javion Clowney there, and a guy who a lot of people saw that hit against Michigan, as a sophomore,
mm-hmm.
and just were wowed away because of the sports center factor, and he had all the physical tools there, and but then, hey, people were saying, hey, don't play as a junior, sit out, you're going to be the number one overall pick. You had reported,
mm-hmm.
All the agents, the Jay-Z's, everybody that was there, in Columbia, kind of trying to woo this guy. And, hey, he was going to be the kind of that second coming of Bruce Smith, Lawrence Taylor type guy. And, ends up going number one overall to the Houston Texans, which to me, how I think, he's been used, he was never, to me, never a 3-4 outside linebacker. He was always a 4-3 defensive end. And I think that's
right.
an issue where, when you talk about scheme fit, and I think Houston figured, hey, we still got to take, he's the best player, there athletically, can be dominant. We'll pair him with J.J. Watt. And, we'll even though we're in a 3-4 defense, and he's a little bit out of position playing that, that stand-up, rush guy, he still can be a dominant force. We'll pair him with Winston Merciless there, under first-round pick a couple of years ago. And we'll have two edge guys with J.J. Watt, and we'll be a dominant defense. That just hasn't happened, so far.
Right.
Number one,
right.
because of injuries, and number two, I think he just doesn't fit in that scheme, And again, I think that's where you talk about first-round picks. Scheme fit is huge and a factor that people, don't really look at. And when we talk about, hey, have they been productive as a number one overall pick?
Yeah, that's a good point. But it, to me, the issue with Clowney was, and I think even Spurrier was rather open about this, he's a guy that was not a big-time practice guy, probably didn't prepare the way he should, didn't seem to love the game, didn't have the heart of a warrior. And I think that's shown up. I mean, he's played a very limited number of games with the Texans now. Obviously, a lot of people will say that's unfair. He's had knee injuries. He's had a number of issues that have kind of set him back. But I can tell you, living in Houston, there is a tremendous level of frustration. I guess partially when you compare a guy like a J.J. Watt, who, you know, you can cut his leg off, he's going to still try to limp out on the field and play hard, versus a guy like Clowney, who's really struggled to stay on the field. It's rarely been a factor when he's been on the field. He just, again, his career has started off on a trajectory that is not impressive. And, you know, was Clowney a trap pick? I don't know. I guess you could debate about it. The number two pick was Greg Robinson. I don't know that there was necessarily a groundswell of support for him either as number one guy. I think on purely talent and ability, Clowney was the clear number one. I mean, he had Mario Williams kind of physical skills. But the concern, I think, that came in was in, you know, does he have that motor that you're looking for? Is he going to be able to do consistently what he did, you know, against Michigan in the bowl game as a true sophomore? I think that it showed that that's not something that is in his DNA, at least so far. And we'll see. You know, again, it is early, and there's still a lot of things that could happen, but so far it hasn't happened yet. And maybe the light comes on, but I think, you know, again, this is a situation where the Texans may have gone Bortles, and obviously they still have a hole at quarterback, but Bortles certainly hasn't lit the world on fire either. They were kind of trapped. And so I think Clowney is another classic example of a trap kind of pick. And it was a tough situation for the Texans there.
Yeah, but, you know, I think with Clowney, with a guy who was that dominant in high school and was able to, you know, be the consensus number one overall player,
sure,
you know, in high school football, going into South Carolina and was kind of, you know, as a sophomore, was dominant, you know, and you're right. And
yeah,
I think he did see Marcus Lattimore and what happened to him in regards to a couple injuries, you know, and if you're that guy in the team, maybe you do kind of say, ooh, let me shut this down. I don't, you know, I got a ton of money, you know, coming here, you know, as a number
right.
one overall pick. It's a life changer, you know, there for my family. So, I shut it down there. And so I think when you're that talented athletically, sometimes those guys don't work as hard because they know, hey, you know,
mm-hmm.
they've been that dominant in high school and college, and, hey, I can just turn it on when I need it. And that's not the
mm-hmm.
case in the NFL, you know, because
mm-hmm.
everybody's talented, and it really comes down to your film study and your work ethic, and that's how you become, you know, that Hall of Fame type guy, and the work ethic that the J.J. Watts have of the world, and, you know, and how his career has kind of ascended from a lot of people, you know, hey, he's a tight end at Central Michigan, you know, then decides to walk on at Wisconsin, you know, and then, hey, you know, kind of, you know, shows onto the scene where J.J. Watt, I mean, Clowney, you know, he was never going to have to be a walk on anywhere, you know, there, let alone go to a MAC school to start his career like J.J. Watt did. So I think that's where you see, hey, maybe two lanes, you know, hey, one guy had to kind of scratch his claw and clawed it to get where he wanted to, and one, hey, he's kind of always been, you know, that freak athlete there.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, another point you made, and I've always kind of wondered about if players kind of overplay their hand, but very often you see a player that is clearly going to be coming out for the draft early, and even when they're seniors, that last season is not the same season previous one where they really kind of developed their reputation and earned all the headlines and what have you. I think Clowney was a classic example of that. You can go back to in early 2000s when Javon Kearse was coming out. I remember he was dominant going into his senior year. The last year that I can't recall if he left early or not, but anyway, his last year at Florida, he made some plays, but he wasn't a consistent disruptor the way he had been the previous season. And, you know, you see that year after year, players that really lit the lamp 2 years before they came out. Their final year is kind of, I don't know, maybe even somewhat, some might consider mediocre, but they've done so much and they've got such clear athletic skills akin to a Clowney, teams are going to still take them. And, you know, even though Clowney didn't do as a junior what he did as a sophomore, he had done enough as a sophomore, I think, that teams, at least the Texans, felt like they couldn't pass on him, which kind of made him a trap. I don't know if any other teams really ever were willing to step up and make the kind of King's Ransom pick offer that a lot of people thought maybe the Texans should have done, and I think that's what makes it, again, that's kind of what makes it a trap pick. They're, everyone, you know, all the you know, the armchair quarterbacks and the draft gurus out there want to say, hey, look, if you don't want the number one, then just trade it for a bunch of number ones for the following years and number twos and what have you. But very rarely are teams willing to make that kind of Herschel Walker deal, you know, that we saw so long ago, because they're trying to win too and they don't want to leverage their future too much.
Well, yeah, and if we see what the Rams were able to get for, you know, RG3, you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, from the Washington Redskins, I think a lot of people use that now as kind of a benchmark of, hey, well, we need, you know, if we're going to trade a top pick, we need a lot of, you know, future, you know, first round picks. And, you know, like
right.
teams aren't willing to, you know, to give that up there. So, you
right.
know, definitely some interesting, you know, debates there. And I think, you know, we'll always see that here with the NFL draft. And, because it is subjective and people are trying to, you know, trying to judge people and kind of evaluate them to see what they're going to be at the next level, how hard they're going to work, what type of dedication level. And I think that's why you see a lot of the undrafted guys. I mean, the undrafted, you know, players make up a good percentage of the NFL rosters. And I think that's because they have
yeah,
the chip on their shoulder.
Point.
They're willing to work super hard because mm-hmm. they weren't given that kind of, you know, life of the NFL on a silver platter like, you know, these number one overall picks have, or in definitely the first and second round type guys there. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, great show, mm-hmm. kind of, you know, as we kind of wrap up here, got a couple of minutes here. You know, I think we've seen some of the Senior Bowl announcements kind of come out there. We're seeing they'll kind of trickle there in social media, and you know, I think now the Senior Bowl finally officially on their website, you know, announced the first 19 guys there. No real surprises. I think we're seeing a couple, you know, the two small school corners. You know, they're trying to find those diamonds in the rough. I don't, you know, are those the best two corners? You know, I don't know. I'm just, you know, obviously
mm-hmm.
Phil Savage, you know, thinks that they are. You know, worthy of a Senior Bowl invite. And I think they were. I just
mm-hmm.
don't know if they're your first 19 that you announce.
Mm-hmm.
But he's definitely there, and we've seen, you know, kind of the Shrine Game put out some guys there. You, I think, yesterday had the first NFLPA game invite that kind of got
mm-hmm.
announced there. So we're seeing that there, and then kind of what else we got, you know, kind of going on with what we're here in the industry as well as inside the league.
Well, continuing the All-Star theme, I think we're going to have a fourth game, and we'll talk about that in today's rep rumblings. We'll kind of flesh that out as we go forward. I think there's still time for a fifth game, which excites agents and lower-tier players, maybe not the draft fans that are following, you know, the Senior Bowl-type players and the Shrine Game players as much. But across the business, it's big news, and we're trying to kind of ferret that out and get it all nailed down and figured out. We'll expand on that today, and we'll expand on that in the week coming. We're also working a lot with trainers and trying to bring them to the forefront. You know, Justin, you know the value of trainers and what a big part of the game they've become in the last few years. And so we'll continue to expand on that and talk about who's out there and who's doing new and exciting things on that front. So a lot going on. Obviously, this is a big time of the year. December is a huge part of the year for, you know, people like me and people like you where, you know, signings are taking place and people are making big decisions. So there's a lot ahead, and it's an exciting time.
Yeah, so that's huge news, people out there, in regards to, you know, if there's a potential fourth game, All-Star game, that would be huge. Great things for these guys who are looking to get in the All-Star game, and that would be great. So look for that. You know, so go subscribe to Inside the League, getting to be able to get that breaking news, and hopefully we'll be able to talk a little bit about that more next week on Inside the Football Business. So Neil, you have a great week, and we look forward to talking with you, you know, next week as we keep wrapping about the NFL.
Can't wait. Looking forward to it already. Justin, thanks for having me on. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Later, man.